When you're building a culture of belonging, every word counts. That's why Textio brings the world's most advanced language insights into your hiring and employer brand content. Our industry-leading approach to artificial intelligence and machine learning provides the tools needed to find more diverse candidates. In short, Textio builds more equitable workspaces, guiding businesses and writing more inclusive job posts. And we're building on that success by bringing even more products to the market for all people who share our belief that language matters. Words have power, and at Textio, we harness that power to increase the access and availability of value-driven work for everyone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Break Room. The Break Room is a podcast by a Black mental health professional and a Black mental health researcher for Black professionals with the mission to remind you that you matter, you're valuable, and your wellness and joy are a priority for liberation. My name is Dr. Jide Bamashikpin. I'm a health psychologist, and I work in the health equity space. I'm also married to my wonderful wife and have two beautiful kids. Kicking over to my wonderful co-host.
Hello, welcome, welcome, welcome back, everybody. I am Dr. Nikki. I am a licensed psychologist, therapist, coach, entrepreneur, all of the things. And I work with Black individuals and couples around relational and sexual wellness in my therapy and coaching practice. And then I do racial equity training and consultation for small to mid-sized organizations. And I am so ready to get into today's topic because I think it's they're all good. I think they're all important. I always say that, but I'm ready to get into it. But before we do that, we usually sip on a little tea.
So the tea for today is about the election.
Woohoo! We survived. No buildings got stormed. there were no armed militias, quote unquote militias. We had like a free and fair election, relatively speaking, right? Mm-hmm. So we know that...
Relatively speaking.
We know, particularly here in the South, that redistricting and gerrymandering, voter suppression are very real tactics that we have to work hard against, but they still, you know, exist. So all of those standard practices are still in place, but the more egregious forms of stealing elections did not happen this time. And let's be grateful for that, right? I am disappointed with the outcome here in Texas, where I live. It went from being like a potentially purple state to being like bright red, like cherry apple red. Outside of like the large but few big metropolitan areas, right? So that's a womp womp womp. And Florida. Also, we're looking at you, your people, G-Day. You're from whence you hail.
Always let me down.
Yes.
The last 20 years.
Maybe DeSantis swept that election. Like, it wasn't even close.
Was not even close.
And that's crazy, right? Because the other opponent was governor before. Like, he's already proven that he can do the job.
He wasn't well liked, though. The point of, you know, so sometimes, you know, elections are about a lot of things. You have to have the right candidate. You know, Charlie Crist, not particularly well liked. First, he was a Republican, then he tried to be Democrat, and he tried to be, you know, but the biggest issue is Georgia.
Baby, what's going on, Georgia? How is it that thin of a margin? It's less than 1% difference. Like, I did the math. I was like, this is 0.6% difference. How did that many people believe that there was any kind of equity among these two candidates, between these two candidates, that the race could be this close? So now we all have to wait with bated breath until mid-December to figure out what's going to happen. Yep. And I really, 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 really hope that Warnock is able to pull it out. You know, Stacey Abrams and Black voters, Black voting organizations have been really turning Georgia out. And so I hope they can continue to get people motivated to come out for this special election, which is harder to do. But yeah. I really don't want us to lose the Senate and the House. And we know the Supreme Court is essentially biased, right?
We're going to see what happens.
That yep. leaves us with Joe. Little Joe. JoJo. Robinette.
Robinette.
That's all I got. Yeah. So it wasn't as horrible as it could have been. That I think many of us
it could have been worse. It could have been worse.
Is it great though? No. It's not great. So that's where we are.
That's where we are. That's our tea for today.
Yes.
So our episode today, we wanted to talk about ERGs, particularly Black ERGs. And ERGs stand for Employee Resource Group. So, like, what are they? What is their purpose? You know, are they fulfilling their purpose? So what do you think, Dr. Nikki?
So ERGs, employee resource groups, are these institutional, these embedded organizations within broader institutions that are volunteer-based, to be clear, right? There's no compensation for you to be in the leadership structure or to participate in an ERG. So they're volunteer-led, employee-led affinity groups, right? And so it's an opportunity for folks who share certain identities, most often marginalized identities of some sort, right? So we're talking about Black and or BIPOC ERGs, LGBTQIA plus ERGs, even women's ERGs.
Women's ERGs.
Yeah. Folks with disabilities, neurodiversity, right? And so it's supposed to be a dedicated space, sort of psychological space, because there's not typically a physical space dedicated to this, but a space for individuals with those shared identities to be able to connect within and network within the broader organization, right? And the reason why we want to talk about it is because I think they serve a function for sure. I think organizations that have them are better served than not. And I personally have always felt like they're a missed opportunity for Black employees, in that, you know, we've talked on here before about you may be one of one in your area in an organization, or you may be one among a handful in the broader organization as well, right? And so I always think about the capacity of ERGs to have sort of collective bargaining, or at least be a space where you all can have like critical mass within an organization to advocate for mental wellness, right? For more safe spaces, for more resources to be allocated towards the well-being of Black employees, for there to be a legitimate voice for marginalized employees within an organization. And I have not seen many examples where ERGs have really functioned on that level. Mm-hmm. What's been your experience?
I think in theory, employee resource groups are a good idea, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, presumably a safe space for people from certain communities, right? But at the end of the day, your employer is not your friend, and it's for the institution, is my experience and my understanding of it, right?
Yes.
So one, people can't be excluded from ERGs, right? So even if you're not a member of a BIPOC group, right, you can still be in the BIPOC ERG, right?
Yes.
So in some sense, that kind of, you can still be a man in the woman's ERG, right?
Yes. Yes.
So in that sense, it's not fully kind of like the safe space in a way,
mm-hmm.
right? And also, you know, like they don't, in my opinion, they don't actually serve to, they serve as a meeting space for employees with these identities and to like have events and have talks, right? But as far as substantive change in the organization for these groups, that is definitely not the purpose, right? Like,
oh,
they definitely
for sure.
don't want these groups to organize and get together and say, you know what, and come up with a list of demands, right? Like, that's definitely not what they want.
No, of course.
And that's how they should function.
So this is, you know, again, what are we focused on here at the break room? We're talking about optimal, right? We're talking about well-being and opportunities for liberation. So absolutely, no, the employers are not facilitating space for their marginalized employees to create a takeover, right? That's not at all what the resources allocated to them for are for, or the function. I totally get that. And I live in a space where just because something is purposed for one thing doesn't mean it can't function in another way. And I think that's the piece that I'm talking about, right? So said differently, you know, we're all together in this space. We can identify who are our trusted allies within this space, right? So we just had our episode recently to talk about coons in the workplace. Well, the ERG is a space to be able to identify whose folks are in alignment with your worldviews, your politics, your beliefs, and whose are not. And I think it's another way that you could be leveraging your opportunities for networking and for success, for promotion, for professional development, for bargaining, for advocating, because we're naturally gathered, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part that I'm talking about. I don't always see that happening, that I see them defaulting to like happy hours, a big volunteer event, you know, and then doing some sort of contribution, a big volunteer event external to the organization, right? So some sort of philanthropy, cleaning up, painting a playground, something, right? A one day event, or volunteering within for a major holiday or event associated with the ERG, right? So Black folks doing MLK stuff, the LGBTQ folks doing Pride stuff, right? But ERGs, you know, it could do more than that. And that's the piece that I'm talking about in terms of there being a missed opportunity. And part of me is really curious about why that doesn't happen more.
You know, I think for myself, and, you know, we've talked, I don't think there's a such thing as a safe space at work, you know,
even among people that are like you.
ERG. All skin folk ain't kin folk.
I get that. But about the kin folk, like, you don't even think that's a safe space?
So you don't, the thing is, you know, you can think somebody is, right? Like, you can think somebody's on your side, like, because part of it, you can think somebody's on your side, right? You can think, all right, we good. Like, we can talk openly about what we're experiencing at work, right? And then the next day, somebody comes in and says, well, I heard you said
I got
ABC.
Shanked. I got shanked in the cafeteria. Mm-hmm.
And it does happen, believe me.
Yes.
It happens. Yes.
Yeah. So then what do we do? Like, that feels very pessimistic to me, though, G-Day. That sucks.
You know.
Well, let me ask you this.
I think, though.
Do you think.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because maybe this is a philosophical difference. Do you have friends at work, or do you just have work friends? You know the difference.
Historically, I've made friends at work. Like, I've there's people who I'm like, you know, you're my friend. I'd like to hang out with you outside of work, right? Like, even outside of a work happy hour, right? Like, hey, come meet my kids, come meet my wife,
yeah,
you know, whatever. Like, yes, I've historically made friends, right? But, you know, certain experiences will change you. Certain experiences will change you. You know, you can experience some type of negative event, and you realize that you can't do that anymore, right? Because somebody who you thought was your friend is actually not your friend. You know.
Gina, you're too young to be this pessimistic.
I know. And historically, I'm not. I promise you. Maybe a week ago, my response will be different.
Mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. So here's. So this could be my naivete, right? I'm not ignorant enough to think like we all going to come together and be on the same page and want the same things, right? No, that's not going to happen. That rarely happens. Even in families, let alone in workspaces, right? But I guess I think about it more in terms of the capacity for them to function more like a sorority or a fraternity, right? I am not in a sorority or fraternity. So let me, I wouldn't be in a fraternity. I'm not in a sorority. Let me own that. But like, I was watching the news one day this week, might even been last night, and Joy Reid was the host. And she's a Black woman. She's one of the only Black women anchors on cable news network. And she was interviewing a newly elected Black woman congressperson representing Southwest Philadelphia, right? She's the first Black woman to represent that part of Pennsylvania to go to Congress, right? And so towards the end of the interview, Joy said, and I think I see something in the background that makes me think that you're a Delta. And immediately, like, they threw up the Delta sign, right? There's a moment of shared understanding, support, connectivity. And I guess my frustration is, why can't ERGs function in that same way? We don't even have to all like each other or trust each other, but we could potentially create a context where we make it easier for one another to be in the space that we're in. And I that's the piece that I'm saying. I don't always see that they that sort of natural connection, like sanctioned connection, there's there's, you know, it makes organizations look good to have ERGs. It's a like a point of pride. It's definitely a key indicator for an organization's DEI efforts to have ERGs, right? And so why can't they leverage that space more than a space of either complaining or just gathering for social spaces? That's my frustration.
You know, I think it's so, you know, I haven't been a part of every ERG in the country.
Correct.
Right? You know, like, it's not possible, right? So perhaps there are ERGs that function that way. You know, perhaps there are, right, where they get together and they, you know, support each other, right? Yeah. And provide each other with opportunities and things like that, right? But I think
I think they're far and few between, though, G-Day.
Yes. Yes, I would agree. I 100% agree.
Okay.
I think the powers that be specifically don't want that, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of like they don't want all the Black people to get together.
No, and start they discussing never do. They right? never have.
Because you know what? That's a class action lawsuit the next day.
Yes. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's a real thing. Like, Black coalescing is always been a psychological threat. I have this very clear memory from being in middle school in seventh grade, and a group of us were gathered in front of the school. We were talking, and it wasn't even time. Like, we were not out of, like, we weren't tardy. We weren't, like, hanging out after class. It was literally a sanctioned free time. And we were talking, and here came a teacher to, like, bust us up. Why is there so many of y'all? What are y'all doing? What are you plotting? And I was like, we just talking. Like, what is really happening? Mm-hmm. And sort of made us disperse. I'm sure you have had some similar experience, right? There is a sense of just threat of Black folks being in shared space, right? It's why there's still all of these folks that believe the BLM protests were way more dangerous, right, than the Capitol storming, because the idea of collective harnessed interest, just shared community of Black folks is threatening, right?
More than three Black men together is a gang. Okay? Like, people view that as a gang. If there are more than three of y'all together, if there are three or more of y'all together, y'all are in a gang.
It's a gang, period, right? Else, it's, you know? It's ooh, what's period. Happening here, right?
Right. Like, I to go back to what you just said, I remember first day of ninth grade, I was sitting in Spanish class, and, you know, everybody, it's first day of class, you pick your seat. Mm-hmm. First day of class, I wasn't doing anything. The Spanish teacher, he was a white Hispanic dude, he pointed out the three Black, the different Black men and the boys, because we're ninth grade, right? Black boys in the room, picked us all out, said, you sit in the front, you sit in the front, you sit in the front. We weren't doing, only us, nobody else in the room he did that to.
Yep.
Only us. We weren't, even if we were talking, that still wouldn't be an appropriate response, but we weren't even doing anything. It's the first day of class. Mm-hmm. All of y'all sit here, right?
Because I got to keep my eye on you, because y'all are going to be a problem for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my whole point is, like, if y'all already assume that, then why wouldn't we use that to our own advantage?
You know,
you assume we trouble. So, and, you know, and this again, I'll probably deeply reflect my own psychology, right? Because if you assume I'm trouble, baby, let me give you some trouble, right? I think there is, what I think happens is, I think there's a lot of exhaustion that comes along with just the everyday business of being a worker, regardless of your level of status in an organization or professionally, right? But we all are workers. And I think there's just a level of fatigue that comes along with that. And there's also habituation, right, that happens. So folks are just sort of focused on the day in, day out grind. And I do think it requires there to be, I think folks have to feel like there's more of a centralized threat or more of a stronger pattern of toxicity of something, right? That like a particular thing that needs to be addressed before that sort of line of thinking even comes into play in the workplace. I just wish we could harness that without there being like an issue to be reactive to, that we could do that work sort of proactively, organizationally.
I was in an ERG once, okay?
And one time I was in an ERG.
One time I was in an ERG. And in a group chat for the ERG, somebody said, okay, what are the things that we should focus on for the year, right? And me being me, I said, hey, we should all get together and figure out what the pain points are for us as, you know, this particular group and work together to create, you know, conditions that are better for us.
Yes.
If we come together as a group.
Yeah.
Crickets. Okay.
See?
Crickets.
Yes. Now, you know? I wouldn't put it in the group chat either. I probably would go on the side and text you separately, right? Because we live in the day and age of a screenshot. We live in the day and age of a screen capture, right? So I do. I'm not that naive. I don't think you should. Everybody is not your friend. Everybody cannot be trusted. There are double agents among us all the time, right? And not everybody is going to be a leader and think in like strategically in the ways that I'm suggesting. But it doesn't mean that folks won't be on board with a good idea. So that's part one. The other part is, even if we're not talking about what you were saying, right? Some sort of collective advocation for ourselves. I still think they can be sort resources like, hey, if you want to succeed in this particular branch of the institution, you need to X, Y, and Z. Or I had somebody, right? Like a real underground network sort of ways of doing. Like, these are tactics and strategies that we as a people have used over time across different contexts. And I don't understand why we sort of drop all of that in the workplace. It feels like we have sort of just capitulated to things being the way that they are and just sort of accepting that. And I just get a little bit frustrated and disappointed that we don't, there's not more of us that think outside of sort of the acceptance of the status quo.
You know, it takes certain experiences to be able to think outside the status quo. And if you never have them, you're just fine with it. You know, you're just fine with, okay, well, this is just how it is. There are certain things you have to experience in your life or learn, right, to know, okay, we can't continue like this, right? And I think, just unfortunately, some people just are never going to have that.
Gina, but I feel like I came out of the womb like this. I feel pretty much like I have been this person my entire life.
And there are some people who are like that their entire lives, right? I would agree with you. I think I didn't know you, you know, however many years ago, but I anticipate that you've been like this, you know, for the 21 years you've been alive, you know, like that,
21. That's my understanding. I love it. 21 years. I love it.
Yeah. 21 years. Yeah.
I was the person organizing walkouts in high school, and got suspended, in high school for, speaking up about racist policies. And my mother was like, just stay at home and don't get in trouble. She just was like resigned to, of course you got suspended for this. Yeah. So I want to acknowledge, like, I have that bias, right? In graduate school, I was really annoyed with some things and went to the department chair and was like, this is a bunch of bullshit. And I don't want to be a part of it, but I will be a part of this. Can we do this? You need to create a task force for this. And he was like, well, go do it and put me in charge of a faculty student coalition led task force. So I am that one. I am used to I'm as Rick James said, Dave Chappelle said about Rick James, Charlie Murphy said about Rick James, a habitual line stepper, right? I'm always looking for...
Yeah, habitual line stepper, yep.
I'm always looking for where are the boundaries and how close can I get up to them? And then how quickly can I cross them and then come back and you can't prove that I did it? Like, that is my personality. Mm-hmm. So I want to own that.
And I envy that. I envy that. I really envy that. You know, I think there have been times in my life where, like, I don't think anybody says, like, G-Day's not outspoken. You know, like, right. I'm my person, like, if it's wrong, I'm going to say it's wrong. You know, if you ask me my opinion, I'm going to give you my opinion, right? But, you know, some people, depending on where they are in life, things are just too precarious for them. You know, like, I like not me, but somebody's thinking, I need this job. I cannot lose this job, mm-hmm. right? I got kids. I got a husband. I'm primary breadwinner. I'm whatever. I cannot lose this job. So they just have to tolerate it, right? And it sucks that's a facet of our experience, you know, as Black people.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. I wish I could be more optimistic today.
Yes. I'm just saying, if anybody's out there listening, the only thing I want you to take away is, but does it have to be? Like, if this is the way things are, does it have to continue to be this way? Or could there be something different? That's all. I just want to, like, put that little nugget in your ears. The Black ERGs, y'all can do more than do a MLK event and a happy hour twice a year. Like, you could definitely do more than that for yourselves and for each other. And if anybody's listening and you are a part of a Black ERG and y'all are doing more than that, hit us up. Definitely let me know. I would love to be wrong about this bias that I have.
Email us at thebreakroom@living-corporate.com.
Like, legit, we would love to know. We won't out you. We won't name names. We won't put you on blast. But I really would like to hear how other folks are using, are creating leverage for themselves to create healthier, more mentally well, safer, affirming workspaces for Black folks. So that's my soapbox about the ERGs, G-Day. I'll get off of it.
No, you made valid points. thank you. So now what we'll do is we'll get to our last nerve, right? So we'll talk about something that's getting on our last nerve, okay? So I think this one's me today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and this is a topic I think we've talked about. We've talked about Mr. West before, yes. Kanye West before.
Or now, he legally changed his name. You just got to call him Ye now.
Yeah, his name is Ye. So I'll respect the man. Go by his name, Ye. And anti-Semitism, it's been a real issue in the past few weeks, you know, so Kanye West kind of lost, I mean, the man's still rich, right, so whatever, but, like, he lost everything. Adidas, no more. Balenciaga, no more. His record label, no more. Like, a bunch of people just said, I'm not going to engage with this person. His bank said, no, you can't leave your money here anymore.
Right.
Right?
So could we...
said, we're not doing this anymore.
Before you finish, before you go on to your point, let me just say, you remember when we talked about Kanye and I said, this isn't all crazy. Some of this is conscious, right? This is like some cooning that's happening. The fact that he started coming around to mea culpa, he started trying to change his tune and he started trying to make amends after all of these deals stopped dropping out. That lets me know that 100% validated my perspective that this is not all bipolar. Yep. This is not all poor impulse control. Yep. This is not all crazy. Mm-hmm. Some of this stuff is you just being completely reckless and having drank some sort of funky Kool-Aid. Being embedded in the Kardashian community. I don't know what happened, when it happened, but there's more strategy to what Kanye does than what he wants us all to believe. And I just wanted to make sure I was clear about that.
No, thank you. I agree with that. So that's happened. And Kyrie Irving, basketball player for the Brooklyn Nets, has also been caught up in some kind of anti-Semitism controversy. He posted a link to a film on Twitter, which many people viewed as an anti-Semitic film. Then he got the chance to apologize, right? They asked him point blank, are you anti-Semitic? And he said, I can't be anti-Semitic if I know where I come from. Rather than just saying no, right? You know, he could have just said, no, I'm not anti-Semitic.
But I don't even know what that means.
With Jewish individuals. So he... There is speculation that, because I don't know, that's why I'm saying speculation, that he may be a black Hebrew Israelite who believes that black people in America are the true Jewish people.
I'm not touching that one.
I do not want to go there. Yes. But you know, I do want to say anti-Semitism is wrong. You know, it's wrong. There's no place for it, in our society. And Kanye West and Kyrie Irving need to do better, you know, and you're making us look bad. Like, you know, you're making us look uneducated.
And also it's like, for me, yes, all of those things. And, it's a huge display of ignorance, right? Because most of the white folks that were involved with putting their necks on the line and their bodies on the line during the civil rights movement were Jewish. Like, there's a history there, that really is not being attended to. The Jewish people are not your enemy. You need to be worried about other things. I'm going to just say that. He said, so, I can't be anti-Semitic if I know where I come from. I can't.
Bro.
I cannot.
So, you know, I think there's some repair that needs to happen between our communities.
Yes.
You know? I think that's what happens, you know, because when we're all together, that's when things happen, right? But this division between these groups who are historically marginalized, no good.
No good. But also it's a distraction, right? Like, as long as there's infighting among us, we can't be focused on the real enemy, right? Like, we can't be really focused on how to recognize how much more collective power we have versus trying to handle this individually or fighting within. So, not to say that there aren't,
right,
things that need to be accounted for and everybody doesn't have a clean slate, but also it's very much a distraction. So he got suspended? He got fined?
5 games. He got 5-game suspension without pay, so it is a fine, like $1 million fine in essence. And he has like steps he has to do before he can come back to.
You think he's going to do those steps? Because he don't seem like the kind of one that's going to do steps.
So there was a report that he met with the commissioner of the NBA and they had a productive conversation. So we'll see. You know, the thing is, I don't think people want to lose $40 million. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think any statement is worth $40 million. So we really will see.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a joy and a pleasure. Black ERGs, I'm looking at you. Definitely reach out to us at thebreakroom@living-corporate.com. We want to hear how folks are taking care of yourselves. That's fundamentally what I'm asking, is how do we take care of ourselves in these spaces and create more optimal conditions for our collective well-being. And until next time, we say peace.
Until next time. Have a good one. Bye.
Living Corporate is brought to you by Doximity. Over 90% of graduating medical students join Doximity to use our tools before earning their doctoral degree. As medicine's largest network, there's an elevated level of responsibility to everything we do. We don't take that responsibility lightly and are committed to working towards a more equitable world inside and beyond our virtual office walls. If you want to learn more about Doximity, make sure you go to your app store, type in DOXIMITY. That's DOXIMITY.